Hello everybody, welcome back to Burger Bants, podcast by Steak and Honour. My name's Charlie and I'm going to be your host for this series. We're up to episode 4 now, and this week we speak to Becca Chong, who is the organiser and owner of two street food collectives, Off the Beaten Truck and Food Park. Thanks for coming on, Becca. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Charlie.
No problem. So, I ask everybody this, which is your journey. So, you're now, you know, establishing the food truck community, kind of running things brilliantly, might I add. So, how have you got to this point? What's your kind of little journey?
Well, I'd say it started when I was a trader myself. So that was in 2017, and I started Tribeca Coffee, and I had a pedal-powered coffee bike, and I was based at Cambridge North train station and Anglesey Abbey. And that was me just needing to leave my full-time job and just do something just completely different. In fact, originally, I wanted a food truck.
Yeah.
And I thought, what can I do that's like low startup costs, gets me into the scene? I have no idea about pitches, events, anything like that. So if I can do something like a coffee business, then that would be great. Even just was thinking about getting a van at a train station or something like that. And then I came across this coffee bike in Cambridge that Outspoken Cycles already had. And I remember I went along one rainy Thursday evening in November to see this bike, and a lecturer had suggested a coffee bike, and I thought, I don't want to ride around on one of those long long bikes. I don't think that's necessarily what I want to do. And then I saw this bike and I just completely fell in love with it, and I knew I had to do it. And it's so it's created by Velo Presso, who are two guys based in London, and it's this fully integrated pedal-powered coffee bike. So you pedal to grind the beans for each cup of coffee, and I just thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen, and I knew I had to do it. So that's how I started, and then I had pitch at Cambridge North, and then at Anglesey Abbey, and then I got asked to do some events around Cambridge, and that's how I started to meet all of the food trucks and the sort of really get to know more of the guys on the street food scene. So I'd been going to Food Park and I'd been sort of vaguely following what was going on, but was really just, you know, trying to run my own business for the first time, and just get through doing all of that. And that's how I started, was being a trader myself, which now I realise was one of the best things I could do to really understand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How it works. Although it wasn't, food, just being on that side of the hatch, as it were, has really been helpful, especially in developing my relationships with food traders as well. So that's how that started. And then I was doing all of these events around Cambridge, and I thought, this is really exciting. There's people doing really cool stuff. And I'm based out near Saffron Walden, and we didn't have anything like that going on, and I thought it would be really great to bring the food truck concept to Saffron Walden. And I didn't know what to do, so I just called the town council and just said, I would really love to do something like this in Saffron Walden, and knew the sort of health and safety sort of side of things as well. And they said yes, which
is amazing, actually, because there can be a lot of red tape, as you will now know, around these things. So the fact that they were really open straight away was brilliant.
It was amazing, and we were so lucky. And I remember I was calling all of the food traders who I had sort of didn't know that well, and just pitching this, hey, never done this before, but this September, would you come to Saffron Walden Market Square, and we're just going to see if it's something that people would like. And I remember the day before driving into Walden, just doing final sort of setup stuff, and thinking, what have you done? Why are you doing this? No one's going to come to this. Any relationships you built with anyone are going to be completely broken, because why would anyone want to do this? So I just had a massive panic. And then when it actually happened, I remember setting up the trucks, pretty sure it had been raining before as well. And I said, you know, it'd be really great if like 100 people came. That would be amazing. And it started at 7:30. And I turned around at 8:20 and just gasped because people were there.
Oh,
it was happening. And we didn't have any social media at the time, I don't think. It was just flyered. I went into all of the shops and just asked them if they'd have these flyers. And just to try and get the word out as best we could. I think it was on Facebook or something like that, pretty much. That was it. And then that really took off. So we did one in 2018 and then three in 2019, and each one developed. So then we had live music and we had DJs and we had different lineup of trucks as well. And now it's a weekly event. So which partly to do with COVID. We're really lucky that it went from being sort of one-off events. We had five planned in 2020.
Like quarterly, was it originally? Like kind of quarterly? Or just summer months, like May, September?
Basically, yeah. Summer months. And I remember the first one, well, after the first one, and the council said, would you do it again? And I wasn't sure if I would.
Like, just give me a minute to get over it all.
Because I'd never organised anything that's like such a... like. Community focus, but also because it's unticketed and you have absolutely no idea how many people are going to come to it, and it's such a risk to ask business owners to come along with however much food, hoping they're going to sell it, and people will come, whether you know it's a totally outdoor event as well, and we've really built it up, and we are so lucky to have the support of the council as well, and now we have a summer space on the common.
Yeah.
So every Thursday, 5 to 8, we're out there, and it's really lovely to just have all the trucks lined up, see everyone sitting out.
Like picnicking.
Bringing their own drinks and really making an evening of it. And then in the winter, we're really lucky to go to Saffron Morden Town Football Club.
Yeah.
We go there especially because of the ground. Mm-hmm. And it's such an amazing team of people host us there as well. And it means that we can operate as predominantly a takeaway service there as well. So that's how that developed. And then it was early 2019, started to hear murmurings that Heidi may be looking to sell Food Park. And it's because some of the guys called and said, really think that you should do this if you can.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if I would have actually thrown my hat into the ring if it wasn't for them calling and saying.
That's really nice.
And that was
having
amazing.
Having confidence in you and your ability and thinking, she'd be really good for this.
Yeah, just having that encouragement. And I mean, it was something I wanted straight away. I knew, I was like, I want to do that. Then I thought also, does everyone in Cambridge? Mm. And so I was really lucky. I just contacted Heidi, who was so lovely about it. And I remember we met on a Wednesday in Cambridge, because it was after Westside, and we just chatted for 3 hours. I think it was over 3 hours. And just about working, about the street food scene in Cambridge, working with trades, working with councils, and how sometimes people think, oh, you just ask trucks to turn up somewhere, surely. And how, you know, we wish it was that easy, of course, but everything's sort of else that goes around. And that's how that started, really. And then, thankfully, it was the 1st of October 2019 that I had fully taken over Food Park. And now we're here.
Amazing. So what's your memories, like your childhood memories? What did you grow up eating? Now I know this is going to be quite interesting, so I'm sitting here ready. Where's the popcorn? So because I like to kind of ask everyone this, because I genuinely find it interesting. So what were people brought up eating? So what was on the table for you?
So I grew up in Hong Kong. So Dad's Malaysian Chinese. And Mum had never left the UK when she then moved to live in Penang, and then Mum and Dad moved to Hong Kong when I came along. And so I grew up on Chinese food. It's still absolutely favourite food. It's what I want to eat all the time.
Like your comfort food?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And it was all about dim sum. And also in Asia, a lot of the time, most of the time, you go out to eat every day. You go out for lunch, you go out for dinner. It's cheaper than it is to buy things in to eat. The street food scene in Asia
is incredible.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And it's existed for, you know, way longer than anything that's sort of happening over here now. And it's exciting, and it really is just someone on the street with their wares, cooking usually just like one dish really, really well. Mm. And that's what I grew up on. I remember because Mum always wanted just one British meal a week. And I just never wanted it. I didn't
what,
want
did, did
that.
She, did she get one?
She did. She just wanted to make, she just wanted roast dinner, or she wanted a shepherd's pie, bangers and mash. And like, I totally understand that now, but that was the night that I was like, but where's the rice? Why aren't we having steamed fish? I don't understand why these vegetables are like covered in garlic and oyster sauce and all of that. And we'd always, so grew up on an island called Discovery Bay, like 25 minutes from the mainland, and it had some just all of these incredible restaurants. So we had Thai restaurants, obviously Chinese, but also Indian. So loved eating hot food from a young age.
That's really interesting because we briefly just mentioned before we started this that my mum lived in Penang for 3 years. And what I didn't realise, there was a real crossover of Indian and Chinese in Malaysia.
Yeah.
So when we would go and see her, we would go to Georgetown and we'd go to the hawker markets and eat, which were incredible. And one of the best things that I've ever eaten from the street are these samosas that were cooked, again, by one old guy in Georgetown with this vat of hot oil, just chucking these samosas in. And they were hotter than the sun. Yeah. Like they were just, but they were incredible. They were delicious. And that was just something that I didn't realise. I didn't. So the food is really interesting because it isn't just kind of one-dimensional. It's not what you think.
Yeah.
Well, for me in Malaysia, it wasn't kind of, I know you were saying about Hong Kong,
went to Malaysia all the time.
It's really, really kind of interesting to have all these different kind of flavours and things that you weren't quite expecting.
So you have, as you say, you have the Indian influence, the Malay influence, which is non-your food. And Chinese, and so it's just Malaysia's this melting pot of all of these cuisines coming together. My favourite dish from Penang is the jia gui diao, which is this sort of flat noodle dish with prawns and chestnuts, mushrooms and water chestnuts, and just this sort of huge flavoursome noodle dish, which, as you say, vat of hot oil, and it's just tossed about, and it's just the thing that makes it just makes me really happy. Mm. And it's in Georgetown, it's right on the market. But also my family are from Ipoh, which is about 4 hours from Kuala Lumpur, and that's known as the sort of food place in Malaysia.
Oh, wow.
And so one of my favorite things growing up was breakfast, because we'd have curry noodles for breakfast, which is such an unusual...
Well, it is for the Brits, isn't it? Because we're about toast and cereal. I mean, that's just so out there.
No, this was sit down with... so you'd stop in the market, you get it fresh every morning.
And it'd be hot.
Super hot and spicy.
Yeah.
And that's what we would have for breakfast. And then you'd help cook as well. So I have this really lovely memory of sitting with my ama, cutting out these green beans. And you'd have the steamed fish and the rice and the vegetables and the crispy pork as well. So, and you all sit around a round table as well. So it'd be all the family, all the aunts, the uncles, the cousins, there's kids running around and chickens outside. And it's all about coming together over this meal,
this
which
table
would happen at breakfast and lunch and dinner, which was just a really important part of growing up.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about Chinese food in general. Actually, I always like to take people for dim sum because it's about having small plates, but loads of them, and sharing. And it's something we don't really do over here. Like you do in Spanish culture, you have tapas.
Yeah.
But it's about sharing. It's about an experience.
Yeah.
And that's really special. And then even at lunchtime when you're working in Asia, you go down to a coffee shop, is what they call them, and they have lots and lots of hawker stalls, and so someone's ordering a dish from one store, another store, drinks from another. It's super cheap as well, and everyone just either has their own or you're sharing lots of dishes, and it's super quick and it's just so tasty. And but everything is about talking about where you're going to go or where you're going later or where you ate recently. And what's really amazing, I think, in Asia now is that people will talk about like Michelin star restaurants and the hot new thing alongside the long-standing hawker stall that they grew up going to, and they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And chefs will take inspiration from street food markets.
Yeah, and take it and kind of do their own twist or elevate it. I say elevate it, I mean, only in that way that it would present in a Michelin star restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
But arguably, the original is always going to taste the best, isn't it? I remember going to a hawker market in Penang and having these prawns that were like cooked really quick. They were huge in just like chili, garlic, maybe oyster sauce. Mm-hmm. They were really simple, and we ate them like nearly every night. We'd just go and get the prawns because they were so delicious. Just bish, bash, bosh on the plate, plastic chairs, plastic table. And you'd have those and then you'd go and get. So, and it is such a great, which is in a kind of a way like, off the beaten food park, it's kind of similar because people come down and they'll get, you know, chicken from Joey and they'll get a burger from Saifron and then they'll get pizza and then they all kind of share it and get stuck in. So it's kind of a similar concept in a way, isn't it? Where people are sharing and talking and it becoming like more of a experience and a conversation piece rather than just sitting, eating off your plate.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what we see. We walk around, have a chat with people, and they have just a whole picnic spread and they wanted to try all of Guerrilla Kitchen Bao, and pizza's perfect for sharing as well, and you know, perhaps they've got like a kid's fish and chips or something like that, and they just want to try. And also, because we're weekly, because we change the lineup, but those trucks will always come back, people seem to just really like trying something different all the time, or well, when are they going to be back? Mm. Or sometimes I get asked, or when are we going to have Kura Kura Pizza Mondo, you know, on the same pitch or something, because, you know, that's just what our family love. And also it changes seasonally and menus change as well. Sometimes the menus change and then people want to, you know, go and try the new things. And it's, so that's exactly what it is. It's a shared experience. And one of the things that I love the most about street food is how, and food park, and certainly off the beaten truck, where you can come, you know, anyone and everyone can come to it. If you don't have,
it's not exclusive.
It's not. If you just want to come and enjoy the atmosphere, you can totally come and do that and just join in. Or if you don't have loads of money, there's always something you can still have. And then, you know, then families also want to, or friends will want to meet up and have loads and loads of food. And that's what I really, really like about the experience is when it's about bringing people together. And at the moment we're finding lots of people are supporting local pubs and businesses by getting craft beers and local drinks and coming over to the common as well, which is just lovely because it just feels really relaxed. And
so what you were saying from your experience when you're living in Hong Kong and Malaysia, it's kind of, you're involved in that again now. So that feeling of people coming together when you were a child and eating, essentially you've kind of immersed yourself in, you've created it for yourself here in kind of Saffron Order in Cambridge in a way, haven't you? It's the same kind of feeling. Yeah, I love hearing you talking about Hong Kong and Malaysia. It's really great. What about like sweet stuff? Was there stuff like a certain like desserts that you would eat there that you wouldn't have, I don't know, you don't get anything?
Chinese aren't really known for being great at desserts. There's the mooncakes that we have, especially for the mooncake festival with the duck egg. I hate them. I just can't. And there's actually the one dish that I absolutely detest, and is my absolute can't, because I will eat anything, everything. I will at least try anything, but you put durian anywhere near me and I run for the hills.
Okay, you need to explain.
So durian is a fruit.
Yeah.
So the first red flag is it's covered in spikes. So that should be your first warning. The second one is you cannot take it into, on the underground, you can't take it into hotels or in taxis. Warning number two. When you slice into it, and the smell that hits you and can knock you out, that should be your third warning. After that, it's completely your fault. And so most of my family love it and they will sit with like a jar and eat it. And then some of the cousins, mixed Malaysian and also half as well, we'll just go somewhere else because we just can't stand the smell of rotten flesh is what it's equated to.
Okay, interesting.
And I've tried it in so many different forms. I've tried it in pastry, I've tried it as ice cream, and I just can't.
It's just not happening.
Just not happening, no. Not okay. But my dad would challenge you on that because he just thinks it's one of the best things ever. So that springs to mind. Bubble tea, I remember being something we'd have quite a bit, but something that is really big in Southeast Asia, especially it's patisserie, like really beautiful patisserie.
Yeah.
So I do remember having that, and also it was a big thing in Hong Kong, ice cream cakes. Not really a thing over here.
No, very but American. Again, I remember my mum saying that people in Penang used to get them for their birthdays, ice cream, and it was a thing, ice cream cakes.
And you'd only have it on your birthday.
Birthday, yeah, yeah.
No other time.
Yeah.
I do have a sweet tooth and I enjoy sweet food, but I can't say there was anything.
There's nothing
specific
that you were like connected with when you were little.
Not particularly. Not apart from that.
What age were you when you moved back to the UK?
11.
11.
Okay. Yeah, and that was hard. It was a real shock. I mean, the weather was. I mean, we spent our summers over here, so it wasn't totally. You know, it wasn't
completely that, alien to
it
you.
It wasn't completely alien, and you know, moving with my whole family, but the food played a massive part in not kind of finding it. Really, really easy, and you know, new school, starting secondary school, and everything like that, and then having like canteen school dinners.
Yeah, I mean,
that's hard.
Yeah, they're not the best, are they? You're going from these like beautiful kind of like street food, like hawker markets, and then you've got school dinners. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. That was really tough. And then of course we'd have the British food all the time.
Yeah, which your mum was in her element.
Yeah, exactly. and then I'd have to like seek out Chinese food. I mean, Dad, in fairness, is a pretty good cook. I mean, it's sort of just a few dishes, but he does them really well. But I then any chance that we'd go back to Hong Kong and Malaysia, normally sort of combine those sort of trips. And I did with work as well, was just planned around where we would eat.
Yeah.
And any friends would be like, right, now we'll take you to this place and we'll have to go back there. And it was a real struggle, but I feel like I finally found
a balance.
Yeah.
Right, well, I'm going to ask you the question that we ask everybody, which is, Becca, what's the best burger that you've ever had? Where was it?
Mm-hmm.
Who were you with? What country was it in, dare I say? And what was in it, most importantly?
Right.
What was in it?
So I had to think about this because I have eaten and continue to eat many burgers.
It's a hazard in your job, isn't it? It's definitely.
I like to think it's quality control, just making sure that everyone's
absolutely
kind of keeping up with the standards. But, you know, it goes without saying, some of the best burgers are within the Food Park Collective. And you know, everyone knows that. But the one that came to mind is a place called Beer and Bird in St. Ives in Cornwall. So this was 3-4 years ago. I think it was. And it's actually a friend of mine's friend's place had set it up, and they're all about craft beer and fried chicken. They're an independent family-run business as well, so it was all about this. And I had the Sweet Mercy Burger.
Continue. Right? Tell us. Come on now.
It's all coming back to me. Sweet. It was like crispy chicken, topped with bacon, and this hot pepper jam.
Okay.
Right. But the whole, it had a whole wheel of camembert.
That okay. So what we say? Okay, what we saying? We're saying bun base.
Yeah.
Then what was next? The jam.
Hot jam. Chicken. Bacon. More hot jam.
Yeah. Camembert.
And you had to cut into it.
And then bun on top.
Yeah, bun on top.
Right.
Then you cut into it. Yeah. So that it was super gooey.
Was the camembert like fried?
The whole fried wheel of camembert. It was just so nothing nice. I've never heard of this. Okay, and then so you had to cut it open, and then you had to eat obviously in halves. And the thing is, it was like an out of body experience. I remember just being in this place where I was like, I almost don't understand what's happening right now. This is just. It was just something I'd never, experienced. And it's super high quality, free range chicken sourced locally. And that's the thing, everything, the whole ethos is part of the experience. It's a really cool vibe. They brine it overnight, and they have a secret breading recipe, and they fry it. And just the whole experience. And I was with my partner Tom, and it was exactly the same experience for him. And at the end, I remember going, I want another one because I want to relive that, but I cannot eat another thing.
I'm so full right now, and I'm not going to eat cheese for a long time. Yeah. But I want another one.
But we went back the next day.
Oh, did you? And did you have the same one again the next day?
We had one, so we had another burger to try, because we like generally plan a lot of our trips around food and where we're going.
As do we.
Right? Yeah. But that was one place that I was like, I need that to happen again.
Is it still there?
Oh yeah, it's still there.
Because we were in St. Ives quite recently. We didn't go there because I didn't know it was there.
Next time.
But next time, I'm definitely going to find this place.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
It's incredible.
Thank you for sharing that. I feel like I've got some new information now.
The other one that I was thinking about, I would just like to give a shout out. It's to the DB Burger. Daniel Board is like is really, really famous chef, but he, going back to sort of Asian experience, because I'd spent a bit of time, I lived in Singapore for a little bit as well. And the DB Bistro and Oyster Bar is at the Marina Bay Sands, the sort of famous place in Singapore, and I do remember having this like braised short rib mixed with oxtail. I mean, it's like super
rich,
and foie gras. And I do remember having it and going, "Oh, that's a bit naughty.
Yeah,
that's a bit special." So that's one other one that I was sort of like, "Well, that I do remember that experience as well," but. In terms of the sort of the best, what I'd go back for, what I'd want again
was the chicken
from Beer and Bird, which I is interesting because I always considered myself to be a bit of a purist with burgers.
Yeah,
you have like a proper beef burger, but actually it was the camembert that really did it.
I've never heard of that before.
I'll show you.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Thank you, Charlie.
And we will see you next time on Burger Bants. I hope you enjoyed that. See you later. Bye.
To find out where you can find Cambridge's finest street food, follow Food Park Cam and Off the Beaten Truck on Instagram. And if you're in Cornwall, maybe pay Beer and Bird a visit and try Becca's favourite burger. We'll see you next time for episode 5.